With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Are we coffee talking?
We're coffee talking, except I don't have a coffee. All
right, let's go. Welcome.
Let's go.
Welcome to Coffee Talk. My name is Esther Lin. This is EPC Leiden. That over there on the other side of the frame is Jose Youngs. I'm the photographer for MMA Fighting, and these are my colleagues.
Hi, colleague.
Laughing at me. This is our post-event discussion show, Coffee Talk, but we're going to combine three events into one, and usually we do it over a cup of coffee, and so Casey and I are drinking this Zocca Coffee Paladino Espresso Blend, and despite the fact that it's an espresso blend, I did a pour over, so I don't know. But let's take it over to Jose, who is, tell us where you are and what you're drinking.
I am in the Dallas airport. I got off I'm in the connecting flight from Jacksonville to Dallas. 90% of the plane, well, the whole plane was full again, but it was about 90% UFC staff, fighters, or other journalists. So we're all tested. So I'm not as stressed, but I am drinking nothing because there are no coffee shops open in this terminal because of social distancing.
Coffee dog doesn't exist in pandemic times.
No, and for everyone who follows me knows my body is pretty much made of coffee, so Jose is not a happy person right now.
Oh no, what are we gonna do?
We'll discuss what coffee have you been drinking all week, because we did shoot some video of your fancy your barista station in your hotel room.
Oh my god, it was I don't know what brand it was, but they gave you like 6 or 8 variations of coffee. So there's like French roast, dark, house blend, and then they give you one cardboard cup, like one. So you have 8 coffees in one cup, and like obviously room service can come and switch it out, but I usually have all my camera equipment in, so I don't like room service coming because I don't want them to be around all the equipment. So I basically would have to go downstairs to the Starbucks in the lobby, which is the only thing open, and just ask for a cup. And they would like, they at the beginning they were like, it'll be $1, and I was like, can I just have the cup? And they were like, whatever, just take the cup.
So they tried to charge you the cups.
Yeah, so I basically just drank hotel coffee all day, because all day every day my heart almost exploded. Drank coffee at weigh-ins, drink coffee at fights. The coffee at weigh-ins was incredibly burnt. So yeah, all in all, if I'm grading this week just on caffeine intake, I imagine this is one of the most caffeine I've ever ingested in my life in 11 days, and none of it was good coffee.
So crappy pandemic coffee. Hey, we were at home. Yeah. We had great coffee all week, so I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, bud.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay, guy.
So, are you recording?
We've been recording the whole time.
So, how long were you in Jacksonville?
I was in Jacksonville from the, I don't even know days anymore, but I got in last, so the first fights were May 9th, correct? So then I believe I got there May 7th, and then I'm leaving, what's today, May 17th? So I was there for about 10 or 11 days. Just pretty much, but you say in Jacksonville, and I say in the hotel, because you could tell me I was in Jacksonville and I would have to believe you, because I didn't venture out at all. Maybe just over the bridge, because there's a nice river walk just to get out of the hotel. But I was basically confided in about half a mile radius. Everyone was, and at the end, we were slowly starting to lose our minds.
Jacksonville is also known as the City of Bridges, apparently, according to
there Diana. Were so many. There were so many. I told you, like, I was texting, I was like, I need batteries. So, like, I would walk to go over the bridge to get the Walgreens that didn't even ended up not existing. And, like, both times, Oscar Willis, the Mac Life, did the preview show for 249. We got stuck waiting for the drawbridge both times because there's so many yachts and boats. And I think there were one, two, three, there were four bridges. I could look out the window of my hotel and see four bridges. So, whoever said that is so accurate.
That's your big takeaway from three fights bad one coffee, week.
Bad coffee, hella bridges, and fighting. That's the three things that made up my week.
The good thing is that the fights were all actually very good.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get your impression of how it went for you and for the fighters, like what you saw while you were there.
Just in general?
Well, it's
each fight night.
It's interesting because, like, the journalists and the staff, like, we were pretty much there the whole time, and fighters would trickle out depending on fights. Even UFC PR team rotated. So, like, there was, like, a group of them that did the pay-per-view, and then they went home, and then a new one came in for the Wednesday, and the new one came in for Saturday. So they weren't just there the whole time. I was seeing everyone get tested, pretty much everyone. Like, when I got tested, I tested with Dan Henderson, Daniel Cormier, Laura Sanko. And then by Friday, the Jacare news broke. But by then, everyone had been tested. But then Sunday, after the Saturday fights, a new group of fighters comes in. So then they all have to get retested. So the lobby was always really full, but it was always everyone was spread out because it was mostly people trying to test. And there were markings all over the floor. I had to get temp. I still have my temp check bracelet on. You have to get temp checked every single morning, and then they swap out your wristband. So if I have to say anything, it was efficient. There were signs everywhere saying the hours you can check in. I obviously felt much safer staying at that hotel than I would anywhere else, even though there were potential risks of people having the coronavirus. I felt very safe, but everyone was wearing masks. The only ones that weren't wearing masks were Bryce Mitchell and Sam Alvey and Dana. Those are the only three people I saw not wearing masks. Even at the fights, everyone was wearing masks. Like the ring card girl, Brittany Palmer, was wearing a mask. Bruce Buffer, Lene, the PR person. Heidi was wearing a purple, because you know how, if you guys know Heidi, she's a huge fan of Prince.
Yeah.
She had a purple face mask.
Nice.
Yeah, she had a purple face mask the whole time. So it was, by the end of these 10 days, I think a lot of people were just really tired of seeing the same group of people every single day. I can't describe it. It was brutal.
Yeah, because normally our fight weeks, we kind of have our standard fight weeks, which usually you get there Tuesday, we leave Sunday. And that's kind of, you have this rhythm, you feel it. But everything was just thrown off. There was
there were no slow days. Wednesday, so like we had the fight Saturday, and then Sunday, like, we still have work because we have all the post fight stuff to do. And then Monday, I guess, was a down day. That was pretty much the only one, because then Monday was even virtual media day, so we had all that. Tuesday was weigh-ins, Wednesday was fights, and then Wednesday's fights, Thursday media day, Friday weigh-ins, Saturday fights. So it's just like bang, 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 bang. You're just constantly doing the same 3-day stretch. We basically did media day, weigh-ins, fights. Media day, weigh-ins, fights. It's 9 days in a row. So my camera equipment pretty much never left my bag. But if anyone watched the weigh-in show, we were all just delirious. We're like, I can't look at another person stand on a scale right now. I just can't.
So I have a question, actually, because we've done, over the course of our time working these shows, we've done a couple of times when there have been multiple fights per week, right? UFC 194 had three events in 1 week, that kind of stuff. Did this feel worse because it was spread out over a longer period of time, or do you prefer crushed in or the spread out?
I'm in that specific scenario, I much preferred 194 because the big title fight was at the end. Mm. Like, we peaked so early. Like, the pay-per-view was just amazing. And then after that, like Wednesday and Saturday were good, but it was like every, like a lot, some of the journalists didn't even stick around for Wednesday and Saturday. So media day, like the media room was me, John Morgan and Oscar. That was the media asking questions. So it got to the point where, like, as everyone knows, John Morgan like always asks the first like 3-4 questions. And I'm like, he asked all the questions. I'm just going to make something up. So it's not just a John Morgan scrum. So like me and Oscar were just like, we would toss questions in now and then, but it was, I much prefer them all right there. Cause again, you're right. It's not spread out. You don't feel stuck in one place. And, we peaked really early right out of the gate.
Yeah. And when we had those UFC events or 3 events in 1 week, it was still 1 week.
Yeah. Still, I mean,
it was still a normal Tuesday through Sunday. It was just,
and so, you could leave the hotel.
You could leave the hotel. Like, you could shake hands with people. You could get within a foot of people, you know?
Like I was staying on, like my floor was like filled with fighters. And at the end we were all like, it was felt like a small community of like everyone going through this ordeal. Like me, like Lene of the UFC PR was the only one that stayed there the whole time. And she was like, I feel like we're just a weird family right now because we've literally just been working together for 11 days. And now we just don't want to see each other at all. I've not experienced anything like it covering fights in my life.
You know, it's weird. Like because originally the original plan, there was supposed to be another card in Jacksonville this Saturday.
I know.
And I was just thinking, that's just for the crew. Like that's just impossible. That's deadly.
And then we thought that when they had announced that it might be in Jacksonville again, actually what deterred it was the staffing and the crew and all the people who have been there for so long, their exhaustion was going to come across. And you could kind of tell because like over the weeks, just people started getting a little less careful.
Over the weeks?
Over the week.
Felt like weeks.
People started getting a little less careful about their PPE and stuff like that. And mainly just because you could tell people were just exhausted. And it really actually does come across. Even though the show was smooth and there weren't any mistakes, it still felt like you could tell that the crew was pretty tired.
Well, and I can say what you saw was probably smooth, but talking to some just UFC staff from like behind the scenes, it was very like a stressful environment. Like I spoke with someone who works for the digital team who media gets like quotes like emailed to you right after. It's just like a real quick like 2 sentences. Like he has to do all that with the fighters, but then he also has to send it all out. He said that the internet and technology and everything was constantly crashing. It was like the most stress-inducing time he's ever been in the UFC. And then Dana comes in, and then right before Dana comes in to do like his little digital thing, like the internet just goes down. So then they're scrambling again at the last second. So I can say it looked really smooth on camera, but it was like, as you know, what I was going through with my own audio issues, it was pretty stressful and chaotic behind the scenes for a lot of people.
So now that you've done this and you've real quickly, how much time do you have left before you have to get on your next flight?
Yeah.
I think about 45 minutes, so we should be good.
Okay.
Just for people at home, make sure where do they know where Jose's at? Tell them.
Yeah, let's remind the listeners
I'm in the Dallas airport. Luckily, this is my terminal, so I don't have to go anywhere. I can see like Courtney Case and Jakar close over there because they're also going back to Phoenix. So like I said, this whole flight, my first flight was UFC staff and fighters, and a lot of them now have to go to Phoenix too.
Hey, she's 50K richer.
You're not wrong.
Good on her.
That was a slick armbar.
That was good.
Props to the UFC cameraman too for catching that.
Yeah, the angle was perfect. They kept it one shot. They didn't do any WWE cuts, make 4 cuts in one move. So it was like good.
And you know that's the benefit of the empty arena. We heard the scream.
Oh yeah.
Dude, you're a sicko.
I'm sorry. You're like,
I could hear the fighter scream. I'm really liking this pandemic era MMA.
The body shots are what stand out to me.
Oh yeah,
it's like punching a bat. It's like having a slab of meat in front of you and just like punching it. That's I tense up. Like I can't remember which one it was. I think it was when Justin Gaethje got low blowed and then Tony Ferguson came out hot and opened with like a body shot. I was just like, oh, like my body just like reverberated through my chair. Yeah, it was Overeem's, like not Overeem, or Overeem's was crazy, but Ngannou's knockout was the sound of Jairzinho bouncing off the fence stands out to be much more than a punch. So it's these sounds that you don't think about that like make my muscles just tense up when I would watch them.
How quickly did the new normal get normal, in the sense that when you saw the first fight night, whoa, no crowd, this is weird. But by last night, by the time, you know, the 9th, 10th fight of the night, you're like, okay, normal, no crowd, fighting, I can hear everything.
I'd probably say after the first one. First one was like unique. Like I remember sending all of you guys like pictures of like, we have a ring girl, look, they're disinfecting the stuff, they're doing this, they're doing that. But by Wednesday, it's just like, yeah, we already know all this. We already know the drill. We know where we're going. Like not only that, but it was the same assigned seating. Like the media room had assigned seating, sort of social distancing. So I basically went from my station to the octagon side, station, octagon side. Like it got to the point where the security guards were obviously security guards for the arena, not the UFC. To the point where it was the same security guards that would just have conversations with us about, because we'd see them for like 11 hours, like three times a week. So they, we all just started talking between fights. So it was a unique experience for sure.
When you get home now, you're going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks. What's that going to be like?
It's...
Why do you have to quarantine? Explain.
Maybe explain.
Well, even the UFC medical team, like, suggested that. I mean, they can't enforce it, but they're like, you've been tested and such, but you've also, like, been around a lot of people. And obviously, like, Jacare tested positive. So they basically, as a safety, and they suggest you quarantine for 2 weeks just in case. But I was going to do that anyway. They wouldn't have to tell me, because it would be foolish of me to be around a bunch of professional fighters who are coming from all different parts of the world and then going back to where I'm from. I could be asymptomatic for all I know, and then getting someone else sick. So I was going to do. They didn't have to tell me to do that. That was obviously a no-brainer. Will make it interesting, because we were talking to some media, if Dana wants to do this every fight night, every fight every week, they can't really quarantine for 2 weeks and then go cover a fight week after week after week after week. So it's going to be interesting in terms of media.
And it's got to be noted, too, for people at home, that while you're in the hotel, yes, everyone was tested and whatnot, but your flight to and from, you're in a packed flight. No social distancing on this flight, right?
Yeah, none, not at all. I mean, you even said it. There was a moment when I was just getting like a breakfast sandwich downstairs, and there was like fighters and coaches, and for whatever reason, like there was like I don't know what it was, but there's a lot of National Guard members in this hotel too, so you saw a lot of people walking around in fatigues. By Thursday or Friday, I feel like a lot of people were getting, not a lot, but a few people were getting a little too relaxed with it, like less masks, less social distancing, and I felt bad for this hotel staff, because they would have to like deal with all that. They'd have to tell people to like if you looked at the restaurant, they would have like this table's closed, this table's closed, this table's closed, and people would keep trying to sit there. And they'd be like, I'm fine. I'm like, no, you can't sit there, because it's like, this is 6 feet between tables. This table is closed. So I felt bad for the hotel staff. But yeah, it was, by the end of it, some people weren't taking it as seriously. So you just want to take every precaution.
Were you in your room when that whole Marvin Vettori Roberson thing happened?
Oh, funny you mentioned that. I am fairly certain I was maybe one or two doors down from Marvin, who all of a sudden I hear a lot of screaming in a accent I cannot understand. And then I see the footage. So I think I don't know this to be certain, but I'm pretty sure he took a while to calm down in this hotel room. Oh. But I heard a lot of screaming on that floor right around that time.
Interesting. So tell me a little bit more about this Arizona thing that might happen.
Yeah. So living in Arizona, our governor, Doug Ducey, I believe it was Friday, so two, three days ago, while we're recording this, announced professional sports can go on in our state. It's the point where a lot of bars and restaurants like are just open. Like there's no rules. Like it's like if the restaurant is comfortable opening and not doing social distancing, like, go at it. A lot of them aren't doing that. They're still just doing curbside pickup and delivery, but the governor wants to bring all the sports back. I'm sure you guys have heard. He welcomes the MLB to just have all their games in our spring training facilities in front of no fans. It's all in front of no fans. I shouldn't say that, but which would be stupid because it's too hot to play baseball outside in Arizona. That's why our ballpark has their retractable roof. But once that was announced and Dana said May 30th may or may not be in the apex because of Las Vegas's and mayor and the Nevada governor there, they might not be ready for May. It might be closer to June, specifically the casinos. Arizona would make sense. It's only a 4-hour drive south. We have an arena. It's closer to the hotel than the hotel I was at just in Jacksonville, to the Jacksonville arena. It's close to two hospitals. It's on a train. It's near the airport. It is in the middle of downtown, and Arizona is open, so that might be a little alarming. But Arizona just made sense, unless they wanted to come back to Jacksonville. And I guess they could technically go to Texas, but I don't think they want to go back to Texas after all the judging fiasco from the Houston card we were all at. So Houston, Arizona just made sense. And I asked Dana to his face, and he said 100%. If we can't get the Apex, we will 100% go to Arizona. So I might have to know the quarantine card, but I get to sleep in my own bed this time.
Why isn't the UFC going back to Florida? He was speaking so highly of it and stuff. He's like, oh, Florida rules, Jacksonville is awesome, but we're not coming back.
I was wondering that too. I never got a definitive answer. Yeah. I know Apex is what he wants. Maybe it's just like it will be so last. Like if it does, if the Apex does happen, it will be last minute. Because it's like right around this. We talked to him yesterday, and the fight's supposed to be 2 weeks, and he's like, the Apex is the plan. It might not happen. I assume he just doesn't want to ship everything across the country again. And then all of a sudden say Apex is a go, and they have to ship everything back. While in Phoenix to Vegas, you can just drive it up and back really quick.
That makes more sense.
It's not quite difficult. Yeah, and the governor is very much like, come on down.
Yeah, actually, it makes more practical sense in terms of just logistics.
But they don't have a place because they don't have a place for next week. Well, originally they were going to fight next week. I'm just saying, it's just there's obviously stuff we don't know.
Yeah, the May 23rd car got pushed to May 30th. So we were all joking. Could Dan just because like there was like I heard we had all heard that it might be June 1st is when the UFC can start doing cards in Las Vegas. So just start the fight at 12:01. June 1st in the Apex, but that was more of a joke. Again, there's a lot of questions we don't know, and it might not even be in Arizona. Like I all joked to all the other media, like I'll see you in a couple weeks in Arizona, but for all we know, it could be Las Vegas.
We're back at Tachi.
Yeah. Tachi. Who knows?
Maybe Mickey Mouse is gonna clear it and like, have your bites at Tachi. Whatever.
I wish.
All right. No, I'm not done. Oh. I was gonna ask if you had another question because I feel you had something in mind that you wanted to ask.
I'm looking.
we're showing off our coffee cups now.
I like that black mug a lot.
What does your coffee mug say yesterday?
It says black metal, black shirts, and black coffee.
Three of my favorite things.
And yes, it's black coffee inside.
Good. It's the only way to drink coffee.
I got oat milk in mine.
Yeah, you would.
What was your favorite moment of all three fights?
Of all three fight cards?
Yeah.
Your favorite, like, you know what? Like, someone asked you, like, just give them one memory of it. What's your...
The Justin Gaethje winning, like, the fight itself was really cool, but I have seen Justin Gaethje fight so much outside of the UFC because he's from Arizona. So I remember watching him fight when he was like 3-0, 4-0. I saw both of his, like he had two fights against Luis Palomino when he defended his World Series of Fighting Championship in Arizona. To the point where the entire town of Safford, Arizona came to the fight in like, it was a it was a music venue with the state with a cage up against the stage. Maybe 500 people were there, and it was like all of his friends and family. And those were two of the most violent wars I've ever seen in my life. And I remember thinking, like, he's doing this for 500 people. Imagine what happens to the UFC. I was hoping he would get to the UFC before it all caught up to him. And I think that was the fear of a lot of people. So then he had that war against Michael Johnson right out of the gate. I was like, oh, no. Like, it was, I was glad people could finally see it because I had been watching Justin Gaethje fight for so long. But to see him actually win a UFC championship, and like, I've interviewed him a lot these past few months in person, whether it be at Dominus Media Days or Media Days in general. And I always ask him, like, what's more important, the belt or Khabib? And he was always like, Khabib is the most important thing. I don't care if it's not for the belt. I just want to fight Khabib because he's the best. And now it's not only fighting Khabib, it's also for a unification bout on an historic Fight Island card. So Justin Gaethje winning just was interesting because, like, you guys have known fighters from, like you guys have known Angela Hill since what? She was, like, 1-1?
Yeah,
pretty like much. If she wins the UFC championship, it's just going to feel like a bigger deal to you than if, like, Claudia Gadelha. Like, it would be, like, we're obviously journalists, so we're unbiased, but there's still some emotional connection to watching a fighter from their first fight to all of a sudden win a championship. That's what I felt like when I watched Justin Gaethje, because he won a state championship in Arizona in high school in Glendale, and then he headlined a UFC card there. It was very surreal watching him win that championship. And Safford, Arizona just lit up fireworks when he won. Like, people were like, people that I know from Safford were like tweeting, like, what are all these fireworks for? And people were like, Justin Gaethje won. So, like, the town itself is like, the town is so tiny. There's like a Walmart and like that's it. That's like the only thing in the town. So the fact that someone from Safford, Arizona won a championship is crazy.
Is it going to be weird when fans are actually allowed to see fights again? Because I feel it's kind of normal now.
It really, really will. Like, I hate to say it, but I really like the no fans. Because, A, I love hearing punches. I love hearing corners. Like, you guys were all saying, like Walt Harris and Eric Anderson's corners probably didn't do the best job on Saturday. And then even the main event between, like, Justin Gaethje and Tony Ferguson, like, from the fourth and fifth round, Tony Ferguson got just lit up. So what coach did they send on the feet? It was all striking. So which one of his cornermen did they send into the octagon?
Eddie Bravo.
Freaking Eddie Bravo. Like, what is just Eddie
roll.
Bravo?
Just keep rolling. Just roll into him.
Like, what is Eddie Bravo gonna say to Tony Ferguson?
Oh,
box. He would be the first one to say, like, what am I doing right now? But yeah, I like a lot of fighters like the no fans too, but it was pretty 50-50. But it's gonna be weird with no fans. I think when fans come back, it's gonna feel like it's gonna feel like 249. Where it was surreal for like one night, and then all of a sudden it became normal again. So that first fight with fans is going to feel weird.
Yeah, to me, just watching it from home, the only fight I honestly missed not seeing fans or would really change the experience was Gaethje versus Ferguson. I feel like a full arena. I mean, the fight goes the same most likely, but I think I would have different memories. But the fact that I have memories of hearing all those punches, hearing them talk to each other. Hearing Justin Gaethje, the human highlight reel, one of the toughest dudes on the planet, just moaning like, "Oh, my balls!"
That's something we're not going to get the experience.
What a special moment we got to all share.
That's the most memorable moment. Like, in a specific fight, it's just Justin Gaethje's screams of agony from getting a low blow. Yeah, it's going to be. I'm going to miss it. Hopefully it's not three fight cards in 10 days or 7 days, because even Dana was like, I can't wait to leave Jacksonville right now. But I hope you guys can experience it before the fans come back, because it's indescribable. It's very you've seen Tough and you've seen the Contender Series. It's 10 times weirder. I think the Apex is going to be. It's not gonna be the same, because you've been inside the Apex. Yeah. It's small. It's built to be small. This was like 15,000 empty seats, so the echoes were crazy. So I hope you guys can see a crazy empty arena fight before they go to the Apex, because I can't describe it.
Yeah, because the Apex is designed essentially as a TV studio for fights. So it's definitely the audio experience, all of that stuff is gonna be a lot different. Someone's just screaming in the background where you are. When you want us to experience this, but what was the main, what's the thing, like my favorite part was when you were describing how when Justin Gaethje got hit and then he had to apologize to his coach.
Yeah.
What other, like, were there any little moments like that last night or on the Wednesday card that kind of like stood out? Just kind of weird moments that you basically will never get again because you won't be able to hear what's going on.
Yeah. Sajara Eubanks' fight was really interesting because she was basically like, she was on top of Sarah Morris and like she was like looking at her coaches. And her coach was like, all right, left leg. She's like, all right, yep, what's next? And then basically it's like she's at a seminar and like Ricardo Almeida was like giving her a lesson. And we could hear like every step he said, and she was like doing it the whole time. So it's basically watching a professional fighter just learn a move in the middle of a fight. Who was it? The Ray Borg, Ricky Simone fight was really, because they talked a lot. And like Ricky Simone was like, you look like me. And Ray Borg was like, you look like me. And then they just started fighting again. So it's like little moments like that. And who was
it? How uncomfortable was, well, maybe it wasn't, was Glover versus Anthony Smith? I mean, did that feel different, empty arena?
Yes, it was like, I would describe it as someone takes like a pillow and just makes it, just like soaks it in water. So you have a wet pillow and you ball it up. And you just keep hitting a piece of meat over and over. It wasn't like slicing punches. It was just like thud, 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 thud over and over and over. It was like, oh, what are those? You train, Casey. What are those things you like? People stand up and they like practice elbows and ground and pounds on. It's a huge bag that lays down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just a.
It sounded like that, but it echoed. And it wasn't uncomfortable, more like it was scary. Because you could see, like, we saw Anthony Smith's teeth come out. And, like, when he went to his corner, I could hear, like, my teeth are falling out. And I was like, don't say that. Like, don't tell your coaches that. So knowing that and watching, like, the punches, and, like, because when he hits them, like, when you hit someone and they're standing, like, it snaps back. But when you just hit them and it just goes and their head stays there, it's a different sound. So I would say more scary than uncomfortable. I thought Anthony Smith was going to lose his eye at one point, getting hit so much.
Oh, man.
And Overeem's, the beatdown of Overeem was like the Overeem Harris fight. It's obviously emotional, and it probably would have been really quiet no matter at the end, no matter what, especially because Overeem won. But when Harris was like just putting it on him, the fans would have been. They would have lost their minds seeing Walt Harris like have this moment that he was so close to victory. They, who knows if they could have willed him to the victory or if he would have made a mistake. But when Overeem hit that switch in reverse, I could like, you know, there's moments where there's like this crazy flurry against the cage and then someone reverses and pushes it against the fence to catch their breath and the crowd just starts booing. Like, yeah. I've seen so many fights like that I could just picture what's like. I can hear the fans in my mind when Harris is going nuts, and as soon as Overeem hits that switch and then pushes against the fence, I just hear boo like in my mind. But it was that one was rough too. Seeing Overeem getting punched a lot, like also getting punched in like the head and the body sounds a lot different from getting like you're punching like an elbow, like it's just like thud. It's like bone on fist, so it's those sounds you don't think like. You get punches sound differently, and you could really they're really captured with no fans.
Anything else?
Violent. If you like violence, yeah. I can't. If you like violence and watching technique, I really liked no fans. The Song Yadong Cheeto Vera fight, where they just like put their foreheads together at one point and were just like throwing hooks and elbows and knees and everything. It was just, it just looked, it sounded like one time they kicked and their legs met. It just sounded like two baseball bats sitting together. So yeah, can't like, I'm trying to put this into terms that people like might know, but it's hard. It's the most unique experience I've ever had watching a fight.
Yeah. Wow. I wish I was there just with a field recorder.
The Darren Elkins fight too, like when he, there was a point where he got like punched and you could like hear the blood like splatter on the canvas. Like, cause it's like, cause like he got punched and whipped. So it wasn't the punch that made the blood. It was he punched and then he whipped his head around. So like he has all this hair that was like sweaty and blood just like whips across the canvas. It was gruesome. The No Fans made it a gruesome week.
The overhead view of the cage was like, it just looked like
a blood sprinkler.
Yeah, yeah, it looked like there was a blood sprinkler or something.
That was just Darren Elkins getting like all this whip, his hair and head just getting whipped all around.
Yeah, just blood. Yeah,
pretty much. It was. I hope you guys in the spirit. I hope you guys experience, because yeah, it's just it makes it more interesting. Like you can also focus on a lot more. Like for the Wiley Joanna fight, when they're doing all these insane techniques, like they're mirroring each other, the crowd is getting so into it that your heart rate elevates. But when there's no crowd, you can really like focus on like the Dan Ige Barbosa one. Like Barbosa didn't throw a single kick, like that whole first round, because Ige was just going left to right, left to right, left to right the whole time. Basically, did not give Barbosa any opportunity to throw, like launch a kick, and then he hits him with that flying knee to the chin. You can really just like watch the setups and the game plans much easier if there's no crowd in front of you, crowd around you.
Huh. That's cool. So if you're a fight fan, you should definitely go back and watch this over again.
Couldn't recommend. Like I was talking with Ige like in the airport, and he was saying like because I was asking him, like it seemed like he threw a lot, but they weren't loud like we expected. He goes, yeah, like he maybe landed one kick to my leg, but he would like eat it and throw like five punches. So it's why he wasn't limping nearly as bad as most Barbosa opponents are. And you could see it like watching that fight. I'm like, these kicks aren't landing at all. And it's what really makes it noticeable is there's no like slap. It's just like it's like a glancing blow. And when there's crowds that drown out the sound, any kick that lands, you think is loud, but with no fans, you can clearly hear just glances. So I think it's clearly beneficial to the judges, because like a leg kick that doesn't land sounds a lot different than a leg kick that does land. It's much more audible with no fans.
Oh, well then that actually brings me to one more quick question. So people had issue with the judging over the last few cards. You say that it was actually easier to hear the action and stuff like that. Do you think that, why do you think that there was the disparity in judging? If you think there was.
I didn't agree with the Angela Hill card. The Barbosa Ige one was 50-50 to me. I scored for Barbosa, but I won't argue that Ige. And then I had Marlon Vera winning. So I guess I would disagree with all three. But it's not like
I'm shaking Elkins my winning. I had Elkins winning too, actually. I thought Elkins did enough. But either way.
He definitely won the first round, and I don't remember.
This is too much.
I don't think it was just so much. That felt like one long round instead of like 3-5 minutes. But it's interesting. That's a good question. I mean, Angela definitely had more, like, and specifically for that, or both for Angela's and the Vera fight. Vera and Angela definitely had more output, for sure. And they were throwing more like combinations, like kicks, kicks, knees, elbows, punches. But Song and Claudia would land like one clean punch that would be much louder than any of Angela's and Marlon's, any of their strikes. So maybe that swayed the judges, like being able to hear the one hard punch over 10, like not glancing, but like killing them with bug bites, strikes. So one power shot versus a bunch of technical shots. Maybe that swayed. You could also hear the commentators very clearly. So maybe that could sway them too. I was thinking like that might be a thing. Like if, like we've heard like what you were at what 240 Cyborg Spencer, like Cyborg dominated. But if you just listen to the replay, it sounds like it was a back and forth war.
Yeah.
But it was not. So like if that swayed the judges too, maybe. I'm not quite sure. But Claudia's and Song's punches definitely were louder than Marlon's and Angela's. Like there's no, like in my mind, I could hear all, like I can vividly remember punches, and I just saw Angela and Marlon just throwing a lot and hitting, but they weren't loud and echoey as Claudia's and Song's.
Anything else you want to add? Any other cool shit you saw or cool shit you experienced that you just did not expect?
Cool shit I didn't experience. Fighters walking by Media Row seemed a lot more interactive with us because we have seen them so much. So like, people would walk by us and be like, "Ah, fuck! I shouldn't have gotten punched in the face that time or something like that." Like, he was telling me this. I'm like, "Don't tell me. Tell your coach." But like, I've been in the elevator with this guy so many times that I have so many like, "So how's your day doing? Well, what are you getting? Oh, what are you getting in your coffee? Oh, nice sandwich." Like these. Just normal conversations that when I would see a loser or a winner, they would feel some obligation to like tell me something. So that I was not expecting, like Tony Ferguson, like I've interviewed him 1,000 times, but I've never been like close, or like obviously I'm not trying to be friends with anyone, but I've never had this rapport with him where I could just like, I could see, he'll never come up to me and say, "Hi, Jose." And I'll never go up and say like, "Hi, Tony." But like after his loss, I was like walking by, I had seen him so much the week like leading up to that fight that he came up and like gave me a fist bump. He's like, "Ah, next time." I'm like, that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't seen you fought for 4 days. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't expecting the fighters to interact with the media as much as possible, probably just because we were around each other so much.
Thank you so much for calling in between your flights. I know it was kind of a mad rush to get to the Jacksonville airport. Now here you are in Dallas on the way home. So.
The Dallas airport is a nightmare. I hate it.
I do appreciate you making time for a good cup of coffee, even though you don't have any.
You anything?
Aww.
All right, sign us off, Esther. Do your big cool sign off.
My big cool sign off is just thanks for listening and watching Coffee Talk with me, Esther Lynn, E. Casey Lighted, and Jose Youngs. And tune back in later on this week for A-Side and What the Heck and all the great stuff MMA Fighting has for you and all the coverage on these future pandemic times and cards. And
And hopefully all three of us will be at UFC 250. Hopefully, wherever there's a date and venue.
Yep. Whenever they get a date and venue, we will do our best to be there.
And I hope it's a drive. I do not want to fly.
Definitely not.
All right,
Jose,
thank you,
be safe, put your mask on, don't cough on people.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.